Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Lounges. It's time for Midwest Beat. You're listening to Lakeshore Public Radio on 89.1 FM on the dial and at the streaming web at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Coming up on the second hour of the show, we'll be joined by phone by Crystal Bowersock. She's going to be in town tomorrow performing in Valparaiso at the Red Barn stage as special guest of Shamika Copeland with the Portage Parks Department. But first hour, Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band. They are an Indiana-based band. They have got a unique sound, and we're going to get to hear songs from their brand new album. And that album is Dance Songs for Hard Times. Well, we are in hard times, so get your dancing shoes on. We'll be joined by the good Reverend himself coming up in just a moment. But let's let the music do the talking. This is the lead track from that new album, Ways and Means. Just hang out the maze. gotta love it. Giving you a double shot there from the good Reverend, Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band. And they got a brand new album out called Dance Songs for Hard Times. And I'll tell you what, we are certainly living in some hard times. And that seems to be the theme for this new album. And it's rootsy Americana music and some of the best you'll hear. At least right now in the record bins. With us on the phone, the Reverend himself, Reverend Peyton. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you all doing?
Doing pretty good. Now, you are almost like a neighbor to us. You're from Brown County, Indiana, correct?
That's right. Down here in southern Indiana. I'm in these southern Indiana hills today, getting ready to be back out on the road. And it's a beautiful day to be in these hills, but it's I tell you what, man, I am so excited to be back out there picking for folks. It's hard to explain.
It's been a long time, and I'm sure like everyone else in the creative fields, you've been indoors woodshedding on new material. Now, this album seems to reflect a lot of the pandemic feeling. Was this recorded and written during the pandemic, or was this done prior?
It was written and recorded over the last year, and you know, I've been working on a record, and then everything happened, and it just. You know, it was like, man, I got to throw all that out the window. You know, I'm feeling a new kind of way, and I started just, songs were pouring out of me, and I had to get in the studio and make it happen, you know. And, yeah, I think that this record is, you know, people that are living right now and know what we're going through, it's going to make a lot of sense. But I really hope that in 10 years, 20 years from now, someone heard this record, and, you know, human beings have a very short memory, and they've forgotten this period of time. I hope that the songs still stand up. You know what I mean? Like it's not just for this time. It's inspired by this time. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, we played Rattle Can, which I think you heard. You were probably on the phone. And we also did Ways and Means. We opened up with that because to me that is a great song to open with. It's a strong song, one of the stronger tracks on the album, and it kind of hits home right in the wallet there.
Yeah, man. You know that song's, you know, dedicated to those folks that. That do have all the ways, but just ain't got the means. And if you know what that's like to live that, then that song will speak to you. But if you don't, I think that the boogie and the rhythm and the slide guitar and all that stuff, there's still something for you to hang your hat on, you know?
Right. I like the fact that you just mentioned boogie, because this is very much a boogie-woogie record. And I'm not too familiar with some of your earlier stuff. Let's talk to me about the evolution of your sound. What got you into music? Are you a native of Brown County? Because I know that's the big hub down there with the Bill Monroe Fest and stuff like that.
That's right, man.
All down that way.
Yeah, you know, my family roots in southern Indiana run deep, and down here it's legendary for bluegrass because the Bill Monroe Park and the Bill Monroe Fest, and you know, 20 years ago there was bluegrass fest everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
And, but you know that kind of music though, I like it. That wasn't really what spoke to me. It was always the country blues, you know, and which inspired some of that stuff. You know, the earliest blues. And that fingerstyle way of guitar picking and slide guitar and all that stuff. And I, you know, I started out, it was, you know, our first record is, you know, it's more like an Alan Lomax field recording almost, you know.
Right.
And then as we've progressed, we've just gotten better at making records, you know. We've always been a really good live band. You know, that's our bread and butter, right? But over the years, we've just gotten better at making records, and I think that people that have been following us, it's not just me saying it, this record is our best record. So, you know, as far as you find out about us through this newer stuff, I'm happy about it. I think this is our best record, and it makes me excited. And me as an artist, I'm always excited about my new stuff, but it's because I'm always pushing myself. I'm always trying to be better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm always working on it.
Well, that on that last song, that was a resonator, wasn't it?
That last song actually is my 1952 Supro. It's one of the early electric guitars. It was a prototype for the Supro Dual Tone, made out of actually they made it out of parts from the 40s. So it's a very early electric guitar, and that's actually what played that song there.
Wow, that had a great sound. That was a real old school sound.
Yeah, man. That stuff inspires me. You know, I like timeless things. You know, I want people to listen to this record and be like, when was this made? You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't want it to sound like now or early or anything. I want it to be timeless because, you know, there's different things that happen in music as far as like recording tricks, right? And it can date things. you listen to something, you hear, oh, it sounds like the 70s. It sounds like the 70s because of, you know, what was going on in the studio at that time. Or that sounds like the 80s because of what's going on in the studio at that time, you know. And so I like for our stuff to, right, my hope is that it sounds timeless for you. It's tough to date it. You know, that's kind of my goal.
Well, definitely, I think your sound is going to last because, I mean, we look back and people like Charlie Patton are still being referenced by younger artists today, and I think this is a sound that is very unique. There's not a lot of artists playing the style that you're doing, so those that are gravitating to it, I think you're going to be a reference point to many of them branching off into their own style.
Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate you mentioning Charlie Patton. He's my patron saint, man. He's really the person that really got me into playing fingerstyle country blues music. You know, every time I put a slide on my finger, you know, Charlie Patton is hovering, you know, in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie was definitely my biggest influence from a very young age.
You've got several albums out. What made you first pick up the guitar? At what point did you say, I think I'm going to do this for a living? I think this is calling to me.
You know, I tell you what, man. I'll tell you, it's a funny story about a smart aleck kid. I was 12 years old, and my dad says, we're going to get a guitar. And I'm like, well, you don't know how to play, and you can't afford one. And he said, I do know how to play, and I can't afford one. So we went, and we bought a K electric with no amp. Couldn't afford the amp at that time, so we had an electric guitar with no amp. And we come home, and I'm like, you know, huddled around, you know, electric guitar with no amp's really quiet, you know. And I'm listening to my dad play, he's banging out all these chords and playing all these old little blues runs and little like old songs from like the 60s and the 50s and the 70s and just different things, you know. And I was like, just floored, you know. I couldn't believe it. And it turned out that he had an acoustic guitar and had to sell it when I was born. He needed the money. So from like when I was born till 12, I had no idea that he could play. And I was so just absolutely enamored by it that it became my obsession and still is. And I haven't put it down since, you know. I mean, it's just been an absolute obsession. You know, by 13, I was given guitar lessons.
Wow.
I was just absolutely obsessed with it. You know, I just loved it. And my progression toward early blues stuff, and my dad, he was real big into like Johnny Winter. And 10 years after, the Rolling Stones, very, very much like, you know, rock, blues type stuff, very blues-influenced stuff.
Right.
And
that's guitar-driven. All of those bands,
oh, yeah,
very guitar-driven.
All guitar-driven, absolutely, yeah. So I just started going back and back. You know, it's like, well, Johnny Winter, okay, he produced Muddy Waters, and Muddy Waters was a big influence on him. So who was influenced by Muddy Waters? You know, where did it go back? You go back, you start getting to guys like Charlie Patton.
Right.
And, you know, Blind Lemon Jefferson and Booker White and, you know, fellas like that, Furry Lewis. And, you know, that just stuff that, you know, when you're learning how to play guitar and you hear something like you like learn an E chord, that seems like almost an impossibility. You know, it's you're learning a foreign language all of a sudden, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you hear someone like Charlie Patton play two things at once on one instrument, it just blows your mind, you know. And like I just had to learn how to do that. I became absolutely obsessed with it.
Well, let's play another song for the listeners here. Now, we already played Ways and Means. We played Rattle Can. What's a song that you think we should play?
Let's see here. You know what? I tell you, let's do something a little different. This is something kind of different for us.
Okay.
Let's do Too Cool to Dance. And on this song, I'm real proud of it because I'm trying to take that finger style to another level. So you're going to hear like these Chuck Berry style licks, you know, from like the 50s. But all the bass that's happening is me. I'm playing it all at once, one guitar, live to analog tape.
Oh, wow. I want to talk about the recording process when we get back. Our guest is Reverend Peyton of Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band, and we're listening to songs from the new album, Dance Songs for Hard Times. So get your dancing shoes on, and remember, you're never too cool to dance.
Your sweet kiss, but it won't happen if we ain't on the phone. And it don't matter what them folks say, taking the talk some anyway. The time is right now, what are we waiting for? We may not get another chance. too cool to dance. Our gift tonight is the circumstance. Oh, please don't tell me you're too cool to dance. Sincere, and pretty soon this old song will end. We may not get another chance. Oh, please don't tell me you're too cool to dance. Our gift tonight is the circumstance. Oh, please don't tell me you're too cool to dance.
I remember being that guy at the high school dance. I was always too cool to dance. But maybe you were too, Rev. I don't know.
You know, I wrote that song because in the midst of everything shut down, and Breezy was so sick, she wouldn't get well. We're out here in southern Indiana, very rural. You know, Brown County's the most rural county in the state.
Right.
The power was out for like 3 or 4 days. You know, I'm scared to even go to the grocery store because, you know, it was early in March of 2020. I wasn't sure, you know, like how contagious we even were at all. You know, even though like they're like, oh, just wait 14 days. It's like, well, 14 days after we're sick or done being sick, or 14 days from the start, or what, you know?
Right.
And I didn't want to, you know, go, you know, kill some elderly grocery bagger or something, you know? So like we were just sitting at home eating what we had and canned food, and people were dropping eggs off on our porch and stuff. And then the power goes out, and it was just about as lonesome as I ever felt in my life. And I wrote that song, so I was like, man, I don't want to be too cool to dance ever again. That's really what I'm singing to myself, you know?
Mm-hmm. That is a great retro-sounding tune there. What kind of guitar did you use on that? That sounded very Chuck.
Yeah, man. You know, that actually was a 1955 K Speed Demon. And I picked that up for $300 in Louisville, Kentucky. And I've been playing that thing for a long time. I love that instrument, and it's kind of funny. It came full circle. When I was a kid, I was just absolutely so embarrassed by my cheap K guitar that I had at first that my dad got me, you know. And it, you know, when he got it, it was about the cheapest guitar you could possibly get. And then, you know, I couldn't wait to try to get a Fender or something else, you know.
Right.
And then now, I could play anything I want, and I choose to play an old K. Just because I love the sound of them, and I love the way they play, and you know they're American made. You know, actually, you know, they're made either in Chicago or northern Indiana. All them K's were a couple different places. So you know, I just have an affinity for those things, and man, they sound like you time travel, don't they?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I would never have guessed that you were born in the 1980s because your sound is so authentic. I appreciate that. You know, and obviously you're using a lot of vintage instruments, so that has a lot to do with it as well.
Yeah, vintage instruments, vintage gear, and I, and it's not because like I'm not one of these people that's like, I'm not going to do that because you know it's newer than the 1979 or newer than 1959, so I ain't going to do it. I just do stuff I think sounds good. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, if something's modern and sounds good, well, by all means, you know? But, I mean, there's just something about that analog and tube stuff. There's something about those ham-wired pickups, you know, those early pickups. There's something about a 1930 National guitar that, you know, just nothing modern comes close to that, you know? I mean, I'm all about Pro Tools if it's the right thing or right whatever, you know, and it can get the job done. But, you know, there's just something about analog tape, doing it the real way. You know, this record was all recorded live to 8-track analog tape, and I'm singing it while playing the guitar at the same time. And, you know, I think that you can feel it in the excitement of it. And I think it translates, you know.
There's a very powerfulness to it. There's a very strong warmth to it. You feel like you're in the room, even though you're playing it off a digital CD.
That's right. And, you know, and that's the hope anyway, right? And then also, too, that warmth, there's just, you know, it's easy to listen to. You know, analog gear is easy to listen to. You know, there's a reason why everybody plays tube amplifiers, right? I mean, there's solid-state amplifiers have been around a long time. And no one's ever really gravitated to them. And a few people like them. You know, there's certain things that are okay. But 99% of everybody that plays guitar wants an old-style tube amplifier. We're talking tube technology is like 1930s, 1920s right. technology, right? And it's not because it's not a pain in the butt, because it is. You know, tubes are fragile. They got to be replaced. There's all stuff that you go through that trouble because there's just something special about it, you know?
Right. I bought a couple of Fender amps recently that are not tube because they don't travel well. And you being a working musician, you're humping gear left and right, loading it on, off a stage, on a truck. They are so fragile, and sometimes it's hard to get the tubes. So I have those solid states as a backup for when we do shows. And they have the simulated tube warmth sound. So, I mean, you can kind of get away with it.
Yeah, as a backup, that's probably wise. Yeah, as a backup, that's probably wise. I just travel with extra tube amps, you know.
Wow. Now, let's talk about traveling. Obviously, you probably haven't toured since the pandemic started. When are you going on the road, or have you already been on the road since it's
Well, we've
subsided?
Done a few shows. We've done a few shows. It's not been coming back like, you know, we had hoped. There's just fewer venues. There's fewer festivals. It's looking like, you know, late summer, fall, it might feel a little bit more normal for us. And we're very much, you know, in need of it, you know, for multiple reasons, not just financially, but emotionally, spiritually,
right.
You know, I mean, playing live for me has been, like my lifeblood, ever since I learned how to play, you know, I mean, I always liken it to fish. You know, you pull a fish up out of water, and it looks really stupid. You know, it's like bouncing around the ground, and it looks dumb. It's moving its mouth stupid, and you're like, look at that dumb thing. And then you throw it in the water, and you're like, my God, look at the magic of that thing.
Graceful.
Like, it's beautiful.
Yep.
It's the gracefulness is divine. You know, it's heavenly. And that's how I felt when someone first handed me a guitar. When my dad brought that home, it was like that. It was like I've been put back in water. Like I've been a fish my whole life bouncing on the ground. You know, and then I was put back in the water. That's how I felt.
Now, when you guys are out on the road, you record as a trio. Are you a trio on the road as well, or do you supplement?
That's right, yep. On the road, we do it the exact same way, man. The bass player is my thumb. And, you know, we go out there and just like on the record. So, you know, people, if they like the record, they're going to like the live show because, you know, we can do it live. You know, sometimes bands, they do a record and you go, oh, well, I wonder if they can pull that off live. You go see it and like, oh, nope, they can't. Well, wow. We can because it is live, you know.
Now, tell me about Max and Breezy. They've been with you, I think, since the beginning. Is that correct?
So Breezy has. You know, Breezy and I, we've been together since I was 19 years old. You know, we've been all over the world together. And we've had actually a handful of drummers, but Max has been our drummer the longest. He's been with us the longest, and once he joined up, you know, things really settled out, and our records really started, you know, clicking. I think our best records are the records Max is on, and not to disparage anybody else, it's just Max understands where I'm coming from better than maybe anybody that's ever played with me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, like, he has a sort of a tenacity about him that is similar to mine, where if it ain't happening, if we ain't getting it, then he's just going to work until he's got it. He ain't going to get frustrated. He ain't going to walk away. He ain't going to say, nah, this ain't going to work. I'm going to do it a different way. He just works on it until he can get it. You know, he's a very tenacious, relentless musician in that way. And it's the way I am too. You know, like I'll do it until it's right, you know?
Now, and, what I like is the image of the band too. You've got the old school guitars, the 30s and 40s guitars. Breezy plays a washboard, which you don't see very much anymore. Max has a small drum kit that looks like he built it. So it's got that unique throwback, almost like if you remember the Charm of the old Mayberry show with Andy Griffith and the Darling family. To me, that's what it reminds me of. Front porch picking, family style. It may look a little silly, but it sounds so sweet. And to me, that's kind of the image you guys have. And I think that is just so cool.
Well, you know, it's just us, man. Like, I don't know. You know, there's not a whole lot of, you know.
Not a lot of frills, I'm
saying.
Stylist
or something, you know. It's just who we are, you know.
Now, a couple of years back, I guess it's been a few years now, but since Oh Brother came out, we've seen, the Mumfords and we've seen the Yvette brothers and all these guys going back to string instruments. Are you seeing a big resurgence while you're traveling around the country, or is it just in the Indiana, Illinois area? Because Midwest, the string stuff, the bluegrass hybrids, if you will, the Americana sound, that's been popular. It never really went away, but it seems like it's becoming.
Yeah, you know, it comes in waves, right? You know, and like there's certain people, like you said, the Mumfords of the world come and it kind of follows just sort of waves of things being cool and not cool, and no matter what happens, we remain. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I was playing this stuff long before there was ever any sort of Oh Brother Art Thou, whatever, because I was doing it when I was a teenager and a preteen and a kid, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like I was, you know, in high school when all these people are kind of like, you know, everyone's playing, I was like a little bit young for like the Gen X grunge stuff, but like, you know, when I would go play with older guys, that's what they're playing, you know? And then everything that was after that, post grunge stuff, like everyone's doing that and I'm playing blues. You know what I mean? Like I was just doing my own thing. I always have been, you know, I just have a music that's inside of me and it's got to come out. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it ends up being a cool thing or not. It's just what I'm going to do, you know? And I never really think about that. Like what's really happened. You get caught up in that, man. And you end up chasing that your whole life, you know,
right.
You start running down these trends and stuff. And I've had people, I had a guy that was a part of our management for a while that was wanting us to chase down these trends. It's like, look, brother, that ain't going to work for me, you know, and maybe that monetarily be good for a minute, but like, that just isn't who I am. You know, I got to wake up and look at myself in the mirror and I've got to be proud of what I'm doing. And I think it's better as an artist to, and I don't want to be, I'm not so obtuse or anything. It's just, I feel like as an artist, you know, you've got to go after the art that's inside your soul. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just have always chased that down. And I mean, I remember when I first, like, when I was coming up playing, you know, like country blues and hill country blues and Piedmont and stuff, I had a lot of people say, no one likes that stuff. You know, if you're going to go play blues, they want to hear Stevie Ray Vaughan. That's why I was told that over and over again.
Right.
And it was like on the tail end, you know, when I'm a kid and it's the late 90s and they're like, you know, everyone, like all these blues clubs want Stevie Ray. And I'm like, well, you know, it's just not really who I am. You know, I do this stuff. And they're like, I'm not into it. You know, and you know, the kind of the joke's on them because we kind of come in the back door of any place that have us. And now these blues clubs are like, come here. Come play, please. And in some towns, I got to go, sorry, brother. You know, your place is too small for us now. We got to play the big club, the big theater.
That's a good feeling. That's a good feeling.
Yeah, it makes you feel good, you know. And it's not, you know, to disparage them or anything, but it's just like, you know, that's what happens when you start chasing a trend. You know what I mean? Instead of going after just what is good, what is right, real from the heart stuff, because that never goes out of style, right?
Right.
I mean, think about that. like real from the heart music, that never goes out of style. It don't matter. You know what I mean? Like that, you know, that's why we're still talking about Chuck Berry. That's why we're still talking about
Charlie Patton.
Charlie Patton. That's exactly right. That's why we're still talking about even Prince, right?
Yep.
I mean, that's why we're still talking about like real from the heart music does not go out of style. It does not have an era, and it is eternal, you know? So that's what I'm after. You know, that's what fires me up.
And I think
not chasing some trend.
I think you found a really good home with 30 Tigers records, too. Jason Isbell, you know, we've got Lucinda Williams on there. Mary Chapin Carpenter's on there. Just so many like-minded musicians that kind of walk their own path, blaze their own path.
Well, I can tell you this much. They've never once said anything about how we make music or how to write songs or who to write songs with or anything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I will say that. They've never, ever once come and said, you ought to try this, or you ought to go do this. You know, it was always like, whatever's firing us up, that they're excited for it. You know, they want us to be ourselves. So that is alone a pretty special thing.
And they, you know, they've got the reputation in the industry that they sign good talent. It's like if they're on 30 Tigers, you got to give them a listen because they don't sign slouches. And I think their whole catalog, their whole roster of artists deserve just because they're on that label to be listened to, at least give them a shot. And hopefully you're getting that kind of shot from the media at large. What has this album only came out, I want to say in July or in June, correct?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Have you gotten any kind of feedback media-wise? Are you getting airplay? I mean, obviously NPR,
well,
you're natural for us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it definitely has gotten more than anything we've ever had. XM Radio has been especially great. They're still playing Ways and Means on Bluesville every day. It's still in daily rotation, which is pretty great. You know, I mean, we've had the radio stations, they're still out there. They'll play real music. You know,
right.
I mean, we don't sit, you know, real great, you know, next to like Lil Nas X, but we do in people's iPods, you know
yeah.
what I mean, in their iPhone. You know, there's a lot of people who would be like, you know, I'll see playlists on the internet. People tweet out their playlists that they're having. You know, so like, you know, that's one of the cool things about young people. You know, people, you know, younger than me, they don't really care about genre, right? They mm-hmm. want a vibe. You know, so like they make a playlist instead of saying like blues playlist, they say barbecue playlist, you know, poolside playlist, you know, but it's like, that's what they play. So then like, then the genre goes out the window. Then it's just back to like good music. And I actually appreciate that. When I was 16 years old, I was pretty obtuse. Like if it wasn't blues, wasn't country blues, I wanted nothing to do with it. I shunned it. You know, I'm like, ugh, to turn up my nose. But the older I get, the more I'm like, man, that's a sad way to go through life. If something's good, if something's cool, then it is, right? And if you like it, then it's good. It don't matter, right?
Right.
If it fires you up in some way, who cares? You know, like, that's a good way to sort of stifle things. Because what happens is, and this happens in blues, it happens in country, is someone says, okay, well, that's not the kind of blues that I think it should be, so I'm going to say it's not blues. And imagine if someone had said it to Charlie Patton when he's doing one-chord boogies, when he's doing, you know, 1-4, 1-5 songs instead of the you know, like the AAB 12-bar blues, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
When he's doing different stuff like that. What if someone told Charlie Patton, well, I ain't blues, so you shouldn't do that. You know, I mean, that's crazy. We would have missed out on a ton of good stuff, you know? So I just, that's how I approach it. Like, any more or two, the older I get, it's like that song, Too Cool to Dance. Like, when I was 16, I might not have went down that path. I've been like, well, that's kind of a, you know, that's kind of a weird thing. But now, like, I come up with that melody. I come up with that song. I come up with that chord progression. I figure out how to play it fingerstyle where I can play both the bass and lead at the same time. And then I'm like, let's do it, man. Because this song fires me up, and I think people are going to like it. And, you know, like, that's what it's all about, right?
Right, right. It's got that real rockabilly groove to it that makes your toe tap. Whether you're really listening or not, your toe is tapping to it because you're feeling that vibe.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, that's one thing. Feel has become very important to me the older I get. I want the stuff to feel right because that's everything.
Now, this album, there's 11 songs on here, and these were all written during the pandemic, according to what you've said. When you sit down to write outside pandemic parameters, is there a style? Is there a Reverend Peyton style? Is there something that you look towards when you want to be inspired, or does it just come when it comes?
man, it just comes when it comes. You know what I mean? That's what's crazy about this record, is it all just kind of poured out of me. You know, and like a lot of times it'll take a while, you know. You wait for the, you play all the time, you're working on stuff, but then all of a sudden a song will just kind of like, boom, it just happens. You're like, where did that come from? God, I wish that could happen every day, you know.
Right.
And it doesn't. It just, like, something will inspire you. Maybe it's, you know, maybe it's something weird or stupid or like you like what you least expect. But, you know, that's why this record was such a gift, because it just all kind of happened, like, boom, all at once. Like, suddenly I've got all these songs that were better than anything I was working on. And you know, I start playing stuff for the band, and they were like, man, now this is special. We got to get in the studio and record this. We got to figure this out. I just wish I could figure out how to make that happen. But this one, it happened because of all the stress and anxiety and pressure. So there was a kind of a tall price to pay.
Right. But all the pieces fell together.
Yeah.
Let's play another song for the listeners. And what would you like to play?
Man, why don't we bring it down a little bit and old school. Let's do one that's just me and my 1930 National. Let's do No Telling When.
Okay, we're going to do that right now. Again, we are listening to Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band and songs from the new album, Dan Songs for Hard Times. We all felt, we're sitting in the house, we're quarantined, we're wondering, when am I going to see my song, or see my friends again? When am I going to see mom again? When am I going to get back to work and do the things that make me who I am? And that song, very simplistic in its approach, but very deep in its meaning. No telling when. None of us knew. And my guest is Reverend Peyton. That is off the new album, and I hope you're enjoying it. Dan Songs for Hard Times, inspired and written and recorded during the height of the pandemic. Rev, I've got to ask you too. When you recorded this, again, social distancing was the big thing. I know there's only three of you. Were able to go in. You mentioned recording live. Were the three of you live in the studio at that time? Just separated a bit.
Yeah. So here's what we had to do. You know, like to make this all happen. You know, we had to follow all the protocols. We went in and recorded with Vance Powell, who is, you know, he was taking things real serious, same as us. Didn't want anyone to get hurt by us going in and make a record, you know.
Right. No wait, Vance, is that the same Vance Powell that worked with Jack White?
Same Vance worked with Jack White, worked with Chris Stapleton.
Okay.
You know, absolutely. Yeah, he's got a Grammy with Beyonce. I mean, he's incredible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just incredible. And so what we did was we actually rented a house in Nashville, Tennessee, so that we could be away from everybody. Went to the grocery store so we could, you know, cook food, not have to go out and even get takeout. We all got tested, quarantined up there so that we could go in with Vance and, you know, as safe as possible and do it. And so it was just the three of us and Vance and his assistant, you know, hold up and doing this so that we could make this happen, you know. And, you know, it was I think worth the effort, and you know, working with Vance was just absolutely a positive experience. I mean, you know, one of the secrets to his success is not just, you know, he has a brilliant ear for what's great, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that guy, I've never gone in with anybody that made me feel so comfortable about myself, you know, so comfortable as an artist. And I could just pony up to the microphone and sing, and I didn't have to wonder like, oh man, is this happening? Is he getting it? No, I said to go up there and sing. And I'm singing into a microphone that he's used for a lot of folks, including Buddy Guy. He said it's Buddy Guy's favorite microphone to sing into. And you know, it was a 1930s RCA 77, one of those pill shaped vintage microphones.
Yeah, those are sweet.
I just loved it, man. I was just it was really great. I had such a positive experience, and I'll always look back fondly on it.
Now, how did you team up with him? I mean, especially at this point in time when everybody's hunkering down, that we're able to get this guy to say, yeah, I'll come in the studio with you.
Well, we've been, before everything shut down, we've been talking to different producers. And I wanted to go in with I produced the last like three or four or something. And I wanted to go in and do something different. I wanted to just play. I didn't want to think about how it was being recorded. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I want to just go in and be an artist and not have to think about being a producer in any way. So I've been talking to different people. And Vance had seen us, you know, a handful of times. He was a fan. He'd been to shows. And he really understood what we were all about. You know what I mean? And that was really the selling point to me. You know, we've been talking, and now we're friends. Like, I hope to make a bunch of records with him in the future. You know, I do. I really hope it works out again. You know, was a very, very positive situation. And having someone around that understands what you're all about makes a big difference. It really does.
Right, right. I can hear him making sense as a producer when you think of artists like Chris Stapleton or even Jack White. But when you say Beyonce, it's like light years apart from what you're doing, that he could be so versatile and so broad and so successful in all these different styles really speaks well of his abilities.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he's a producer, like, you know, in the way that, you know, I don't know, he understands, like, he tries to figure out what is how to make you be the best you can be, right?
Uh-huh.
He's just trying to capture you. And then, you know, he's got some tricks up his sleeve with how he does that, mic placement, and, you know, preamps he's using, and old school stuff mixed with new stuff. And you know, he's got a really good ear, and he's got a really cool way of doing things, but he starts first. And I think the secret to success is he's like, what's this person good at? What do they do? You know, what is this? What are we trying to do here? And let's make that be as good as it can be, you know? And that starts really at the product, right? It starts
right.
with the artist.
Right.
So the artist got to be comfortable. We've got to, you know, show what this is all about. And, you know, I think that's part of his success too, you know, not just he's a brilliant, brilliant, you know, mixer and producer. Cause I mean, you got to remember we were going in and we're recording things live to analog tape. You don't have there's not really any like, oh, well, we'll fix it in Pro Tools later. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it is what it is, you know? So it's, you know, he's got, there might be I don't know how many microphones on the drums, but he's got to mix it down to one track on that 8-track. So the drums are going to be what they're going to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no change in that in the end. There's only so much that can be done, you know? So, like, you have to have a certain amount of confidence and you know, brilliant genius as a mixer of music and as a producer. And, you know, then also you have to make sure that the artist is hitting on all cylinders. So they're not the ones screwing it up, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's tough to fix too.
Right.
So, you know, like, it's everything's got to be right in that way, but it sure makes it easy when you're working with someone that's just so agreeable. And because, you know, like, sometimes producers, they're like Bobby Knight, you know, coaches. They
right.
think they got to kind of be beating you up or something to get something out of you. Or they come in with an idea. They go, okay, well, we're going to make this band sound like this. And they're trying to take a, you know, that round peg, put it in a square hole, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that don't always happen. You got to take a hammer to it. And I don't interact well with that. You know what I mean? I just don't. I'm not the kind of person that needs a Bobby Knight style coach, because I'm hard enough on myself. You know what I mean? Like,
uh-huh.
I'm going to be on it. I'm going to be working on it. And like I said, I'm not obtuse about things. I just don't need someone to come in and say, okay, you know, we're going to bring in a guy that's going to rap on it. And we're going to have a, you know, this bass player, and, you know, we're going to have some electronic drums. Like, I just, there's certain things I just go, look, man, that's probably not going to work. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's probably not going to work. Like, I'm sorry. It, you know, it's probably not going to work.
You know, I hear from a lot of different artists about, you know, all the multiple takes and things like that. You seem to me to subscribe to the kind of the Bob Dylan method, of which you go and you do a one take, maybe two, and that's it. It's like, you got to capture it fresh. You got to capture it for what it is, even if there's a wart on it or two. That's what makes the music authentic. And
yeah,
I'm hearing that with this. I mean, is there a lot of retakes or edits at all? I mean, on tape you can still edit.
We'll play it until it's right.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, but like, if it starts getting stale, we might walk away and come back. You know what I mean? And like, regroup. So like, for like a lot of these songs are just first or second take. You know, and then some of them, it's like maybe it was took five takes, you know, to get it right, because there was a part that we weren't hitting.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we went and listened to it and we're like, oh man, I go, you know what? I can just play that solo better. You know, I've been listening to it and we got a good take on it, but let me go back and replay it, because I've got an idea for the solo that I think might just be a little bit cooler. You know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
You know, and it's so like, I don't think it has to be first take or second take. I think it's always special when it is, when there's a little bit of like that sort of like, you know, excitement, frenetic energy. But we're the kind of band where we play so much and we're so good at playing live that if we have to play it 20 times, we will. You know, I mean, hopefully we don't.
Right, right. That would get a little stale.
Well, it's just, you know, like it just depends. Every now and then you go in and like, I've had it happen in the studio before where like everything's perfect, right? Everything should be perfect. And like 100 days out of 101, you could knock this out. And then some days you're just like, man, I just ain't getting it today. I don't know what's going on. You know,
right.
We're not hitting. I just don't understand what's happening. And those days are rare for us, especially at this point. But every now and then it happens. Luckily, it didn't happen with this record. But it's happened in previous records where you just got to play it until it's right. And if it is getting stale, you can tell. And you go,
right.
Hey, look, this ain't happening today. We're going to hit it tomorrow.
Now, how long were you in studio? How long were you in studio to make this record? And is that typical for past records?
It's pretty typical. I think 3 days.
Okay.
4 days, something like that, all mixed everything.
All right. Now, I see, I just got on your website, and listeners, you can find all the information you need on the group at bigdamnband.com. Now, I see upcoming shows. You're going to be in Chicago coming up on the 20th. You're going to be here in Greenwood, Indiana on the 21st, and you head into Lexington, Kentucky, Colorado dates. It's not giving me venues, though. Where are you playing in Chicago?
We're playing Reggie's. Rock Club.
Oh, great place.
Oh, man, it's a great place to see a show. I mean, it's one of my favorite venues for playing a show. Like, it's a place where you can really go and just straight up enjoy music. And I'm really looking forward to it. And it's walking distance from the old Chess Records, too.
Right.
As you walk by there and pay my respects. So
right.
I'm it's a very special, hallowed ground for me, and very much looking forward to it.
Talking about the old school sound and instruments and fast recording processes, are you doing vinyl? I own a couple of vinyl record stores, and I love to carry vinyl, and I'm just wondering if you guys are doing anything on that.
Oh, absolutely. This record was made with vinyl in mind. I mean, it was like this record should be listened to on vinyl, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know the CD is out. Is the vinyl released yet, or is it coming down the road?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, vinyl's released. Absolutely. The problem with vinyl is it might be sold out almost everywhere because vinyl's getting really tough to produce because, one of the, like with the pandemic, and then one of the vinyl factories burned down, and vinyl's so backed up, it's a problem. We're getting ready to be out with ZZ Top in September, and we're worried about being able to get product because they're just so behind. And the vinyl, our record it's the vinyl sold really well. And knock on wood, it'll keep happening. But like I said, vinyl is the way this should be listened to. Yeah, people should be listening to this on vinyl. Absolutely, it's tailor made for it. It was mixed and mastered for vinyl.
Right. I'm glad to hear that because I assume the same, but I haven't seen it. My distributors haven't had it. So I'm looking to find it. I'll see where I can track it down.
Well, yeah, but we'll have to figure that out, man. We'll get with us and we'll figure that out. We got to make sure you got that.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Let's do another song in just a second. We're almost out of time, but I do want to ask you one more thing, and that is Breezy. You've been together, like you said, since you were about 19 years old. Now, was she music before or after you? I mean, was she a musician?
Oh, she was in.
Okay.
Yeah, she was into music before me. And now, she wasn't like a musician. I've been a musician since I was a little kid. You know what I mean? She wasn't like a musician. Like, she wasn't a professional musician. Like, I started giving guitar lessons and working in clubs and things when I was a preteen. So like that. She didn't really have that, but we got together so young that she's been doing this since she was young. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I got her a washboard, and she was always kind of into like more like jug band kind of stuff, like leaning to that more than me. And so I got her a washboard, and we just sort of, I got her started playing, and she really took off. And, we did a song with Steve Cropper that was released, in the middle of the pandemic. And I think that it got overlooked. I don't think enough people listened to that because it was just incredible. It was us and Dom Clement and Steve, the Colonel Cropper, one of the most important guitar players
of all time
that ever lived. And he told me after the session, I'm fired up. He's playing this. I'm singing on this. I'm playing slide guitar. We're in Sun Studios playing with Steve Cropper. And he's like, he pulls me over. He goes, "Hey, I want to talk to you." I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what's he going to say? what wisdom is he going to impart on me? Cause he's been just dropping wisdom bombs the whole time we've been in there. He comes up and he's like, "Hey, look, I want you to know that your washboard player is the best washboard player I ever heard in my life. And in fact, I think she's one of the best percussionists I've ever played with in my whole life."
Wow.
And he even stopped in the middle of the session. And he said, "Everyone needs to be playing like she's doing it. She's the one feeling it right." And I've always said that my whole life. Like, I am way too type A to not play with someone that's awesome. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's not just because she's my wife. We've been together since we were young. Like, she never would have ever started playing with me. That's just the way I am. And like it or not, good or bad. And she plays washboard for this band because she's incredible. And her feel is what's so incredible. Like, a lot of times you play the washboard and they want to scratch notes all over every damn thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They want to vomit notes on things. That's not what she does. She plays a perfect rhythm. So it helps fill in the space. So like, my thumb's playing a bass line, a low end, my fingers playing lead. In the middle, she's filling in a space what like someone scratching on a rhythm guitar might do.
Right.
A lot of the way she does things. So she's filling in the music where it needs filled in. She's not just going to be like, "Okay, I'm going to play the washboard over all this stuff." She finds a groove and she makes all of everything lock in. Where if you were to take this record and pull all the washboard off of it, you would be sad. You would be like, "Whoa, where'd it go?" It's amazing how much she actually is adding. But like a good rhythm section, you hardly notice.
Right.
Right.
You don't overplay.
That's right. A good rhythm section is, you only hear about a rhythm section when they're either vomiting notes off everything or they're bad. A good rhythm section is almost invisible. And unfortunately, you know, that's just the way it is. And
yeah.
She is a part of a good rhythm section. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, if Steve Cropper says you're the best washboard player there is, then that's probably the true.
Right, right.
I was like, I was hoping he'd say something like that about me. Man, you're slide guitar, man. You're singing. Nope. He had nothing.
It's all about Breezy.
It was all about Breezy. He's like, she is unbelievable, man.
What
and I'm like, brother, I tell you, I know.
What is the song you did with Steve? I'd like to look into that.
Man, it's we did the Elmore James song, Shake Your Moneymaker.
Oh, okay. Is that out online?
It is, man. It's on Spotify. It's on, in fact, it was only released on Spotify. It never got to be on vinyl or anything. It's just a single, you know, came out, recorded at Sun Studios, live to tape. Sounds like Sun, man. It's cool.
Wow. I'm going to have to definitely look into that. That sounds like, I'm a big Steve Cropper fan.
He is so, underappreciated. I'll argue with people. People say, I'll tell you, you know, people talk about different guitar players and they'll say, this person's important, this person's da da da. I'm like, man, Steve Cropper, his name should be up there probably with the top three or four guitar players of the last, 60 years in
right.
American music. And people are like, what? And I'm like, man, if you don't know, look at what he was a part of. Rhythm and blues guitars, we know it.
Yeah,
it's him.
Look at all those sessions. I mean, he's played with everybody, and even as a producer. I mean, he's a great producer
and writer. You know, he wrote "Sitting on the Dock of the Bay." If that's all he did, if the only thing he did was write "Sitting on the Dock of the Bay," you know, his name is etched in American music history forever.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, that it's incredible. You know, and all those songs was him, and then all the other people, all the other labels putting out R&B, they were just they were copying him. They wanted their guys. They're like, sound like this guy, sound like Steve Cropper. That's what they all did. And then everything starts sounding like that, right?
Yep.
All the R&B guitar, but it was him. He was the one that. I mean, it was just his way of doing it. And what's so cool is the way he does things, the way he plays guitar is just so unique. Like watching him come up with parts for this song, I was just floored, man. I was just enamored. I couldn't believe it because, you know, the way he thinks about music is just very unique, and that's part of the reason why he is who he is, right?
Right.
I mean, it's just and you want to talk about a person that just plays the part, not vomiting notes on stuff. I mean, that's what's so beautiful about what he does, and I think that's why he appreciates what Breezy did.
Yeah.
Because he
yeah.
recognizes how you know important that is in music.
Yeah, it's all about the dynamics. So,
absolutely.
You're going to be at Reggie's on August 20th, again, Greenwood, Indiana, not too far, on the 21st.
No, just on the south side of Indianapolis, basically Indianapolis.
Whereabouts in Greenwood you playing? What venue?
Man, it's a park. It's called Wham Fest. It's a charity festival, charity music festival. It's music all day. We headline. It's fairly early. So, folks want to come out we're going to, I forget exactly what time we go on, but I want to say 7. I forget what time we go on at Reggie's, but normal show time. All that stuff's at bigdamnband.com, too.
Right.
All that info's there. And
I said, I'm not seeing the venue information. I see the date and the city, but I don't see venue.
You might have to slide over to the right.
Okay. All right. Maybe that's the case. All right. Well, we got to say goodbye here. I do appreciate your time. Let's close with another song. What's something that that we haven't played yet? I'm kind of leaning to maybe Dirty Hustle or maybe Come Down Angels. I mean, there's so many good songs on here.
Well, man, I was going to say Come Down Angels because that's the closer of the record, so maybe it might be a good way to close things out.
Okay. Last song of the album, Come Down Angels. Again, the album is called Dance Songs for Hard Times. Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band, and they're on 30 Tiger Records. Find them at bigdamnband.com and look for them at Reggie's right here in Chicago. Coming up next weekend on August 20th. Thanks, Rev.
Hey, thanks so much for having me today and for playing this music. It really means a lot.
All right. We'll keep playing it, too.
Thank you.
Here it is, closing track of the album. You can pick it up online at bigdamnband.com. Come Down Angels. Thank you.